and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And it's been a little while since we've had you on the show. We've been bringing in our guest co-host for the last couple of weeks. How have you been doing with your 2 weeks off, little vacation there?
My 2 weeks off has been allergies.
Allergies?
Yeah, that's my answer.
Oh, wow. You were telling me about your... apparently we can cure them now. You were telling me about your summer woes this morning, about not being able to sleep. I think we hit 27 degrees outside today.
What? Yeah, no, it was the opposite. My I have a sleep disorder that, generally speaking, you can only notice in the summer.
In
the winter, I'm fine. It's in the summer it gets really bad. And last night, I mean, thankfully, I work from home, so I make my own hours. But yeah, no, I slept 12 hours yesterday.
Well, I'm glad that you're awake right now. I feel like that's maybe
that between
a bit of a high bar to achieve.
Open quote, awake. Close quote.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited because I think this weekend is Eurovision.
Ooh la la. Of course, it may not be this weekend for our listeners, because we do go out over an extended period.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we will be talking about it the 8th, 10th, and 12th of May. The first semi-final was yesterday, and it was all over the news, the gay news. Everyone was talking about this semi-final. And it was actually because of the song that we played a few weeks ago from the Irish band.
Is that the Finnish one?
No, the Irish band. I am, of course, referring to Brian O'Shaughnessy and the track Together. Now, we mentioned it a few weeks ago because I was really impressed by the video. Now,
but video doesn't go well on radio.
But anyway, I was really impressed by the music video because what it had was, it was like an interpretive dance sequence with two, you know, young men who are clearly in a relationship, and it's a bit of a love song, and it was a very sweet song. So the two dancers, Kevin O'Dwyer and Alan McGrath, who were in the music video, actually performed the interpretive dance on the stage in the live semi-finals.
Okay.
So Ireland went, you know, within a few years, like, from being not the greatest gay record to introducing gay marriage, and then, you know, literally having two gay men performing at Eurovision. They're expected to sail through to, you know, be one of the fan favorites to win it, actually, on the weekend.
So, really now?
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
You think they're going to get 10 P's?
10 points. But no, it's really exciting. It's a great video. And what I liked about it was, you know, for our listeners, this may not seem like much of a big deal, but the Eurovision Song Contest is a big deal. And if you don't trust me, ask Deadpool. You know, he released a PSA, quite upset that Canada is not involved in Eurovision.
Right.
And you may be thinking, but Canada's not in Europe. Well, neither is Azerbaijan, Israel, or Australia.
Or Turkey.
Or, well,
Northwest Turkey is debatable, but like...
Well, Israel sure as heck is not in Europe.
Yeah.
and Australia's not in Europe. And if they let the Aussies in, I can't see why... I mean, and as we've mentioned before, Celine Dion was in there.
And she won.
You know, so CBC, if you're listening...
Yeah.
Because it is the public broadcasters that make the decisions to get involved. You know, do you believe that Canada should be in Eurovision, literally the world's biggest song contest?
What's the buy-in, though? Because I know it's expensive to join. That's why a few nations aren't in it this year, because they're having problems.
Well, it's the public broadcasters. I don't think there's actually very much cost associated. Hosting it gets expensive. I think you obviously pay into the rights to be able to broadcast.
You do pay into it, yeah.
But I mean, it's becoming a huge success. The United States of America is introducing their own equivalent version where the 52 states will compete against each other.
That actually sounds interesting. That would be very interesting. Because there's a lot of weird music that comes out of Louisiana all the time, like whole genres you've never heard of. And then like Detroit and Chicago are like the birthplace of modern house music. Like it could be super interesting, but it's probably going to turn into the same thing where it's like split between like beautiful 20-year-olds singing campy songs that somebody else clearly wrote for them, and like wizened old dudes in their like, you know, 60s singing some traditional, you know, regional song.
or some slightly edgy song pushing a social issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's usually some of those in there. So anyway, Ryan O'Shaughnessy's great track. I saw the video of the live performance. It was very good. I hope to catch the second semi-final maybe tonight. If not, we will be watching the finals this weekend and offering our reaction so that...
You know that I only watch the finals and I don't like spoilers. I don't like listening to anything. I want to hear it all fresh on the night of.
This is true. Yeah. And I've tried to limit the exposure. We did play some of our favorites. I think we played some of the predicted big winners. You know, okay. There's certain characters that always make it to the final. Pretty much, you know, Israel, Australia, Azerbaijan.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no, it's England has won before. Anyway, Canada should get to wrong. If you think Canada should be in Eurovision, please write your local MP. I don't know if it'll do anything, but...
Well, I mean, you know, writing to your local representative is often step one. If you want to see change and you don't know what to do, writing to your local representative is often...
If that doesn't work, write to your local representative CBC person. Dear CBC person.
CBC person, yes.
We would very much like to see you involved in Eurovision. Yes. Signed, happy Can Queer listener.
Yeah.
CC us in your emails. I'm sure they'll be hilarious to read. And we can take it from there. Now, moving on to actual Canadian news.
Uh-huh.
Although there was a strenuous link with Deadpool writing the PSA, upset that Canada's not involved.
I mean, Ryan Reynolds is pretty open about his Canadian-ness. Although, like, Norm MacDonald doesn't really talk about being
from Canada. But isn't the Deadpool character also from, I think it's Regina or Saskatoon or something? Yeah, I think that's also part of the character and the joke and everything.
I know Wolverine is from a small town in Northern Ontario, but I can't remember which one.
There's a lot of them.
He is Canadian, yeah. And there's also a heroine called Fleur de Lis. She's part of the Canadian. There's Captain Canuck and Fleur de Lis and then Puck. And there's like all these like Canadian superheroes that kind of came and went very quickly.
So if the CBC is looking to do an Avengers B-side.
Absolutely.
Who would you cast as Fleur de Lis?
Oh, I know who I would have cast. What is her name? She was on Farscape, and then she ended up on... I can't remember her name for the life of me, but she has, like, really striking features. You need a woman with very striking features, is what you need. And a strong French accent.
Do you know who we saw recently? The Ontario actor, he's done, like, Macbeth and so on in Hamilton, over in Stratford. He was the Ontario cop in Bon Cop, Bad Cop.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I forget his name.
Yeah.
But he was in Anon, which is the movie that's out with Clive Owen on Netflix right now.
Okay.
Playing a cop.
All right, yes.
Back to our first story.
Actually, the woman who was in Orphan Black. What's her
yes.
name?
Yes.
I can't remember her name.
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah.
I think it's a Croatian name. It's the kind of name that if you see it in writing, you know exactly how to say it, but I can never remember it otherwise. She would do well. I mean, she would do well.
Tatiana. I forget her name.
That does sound right.
Oh, it is. It's Tatiana Maslany.
There you go.
There we go. Wow, I remember the name.
She could do just about anything you throw at her, though. She's strong. She's a strong actress.
Amazing. And I mean, the fact Orphan Black shows her being like 15 different people in one show.
Yeah.
Also Canadian from Regina, Saskatchewan. I didn't know much happened in Regina, Saskatchewan, but apparently they may be able to claim Deadpool, and they can claim Tatiana Maslany.
Well, a lot of people leave there is really what we're getting at.
I nearly choked on my tea. I don't believe we're broadcasting Regina, Saskatchewan, so I think that's okay.
So we're allowed to make fun of them?
I mean, I make fun of Toronto. We're not broadcast there either. Yeah. So I think it's a pretty solid rule.
Yeah.
Although I am happy to say that you may be listening to us right now from Halliburton, Ontario.
Okay.
As we got welcomed onto the Canoe FM family.
All right.
So pretty exciting. It's actually, it's out in like.
Oh, I passed through Halliburton.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I really want to go there and just go chill.
I think I had lunch at a truck stop there once. The context here is that I grew up in Southern Ontario and I have family in Western Quebec. So you would pass through like Huntsville and Halliburton and all that kind of, you know, North Bay, all that on your way to Temiscaming. And it's like the Canadian Shield is a beautiful part of the country. It's all like these, you know, pink granite and orange ferrous rock, and it's just beautiful.
I'm so jealous. We're going camping out in about 2 hours east of here in Quebec. Okay. in a couple of weeks.
During black fly season. You madman.
Well, yeah, no, we may live to regret this decision, but
don't pack a lunch. Just open your mouth,
and
it will fly towards you.
Yeah, we full bellies, just like having butterflies in your stomach, but not quite as cool.
I love like a lot of places in the world have hidden seasons. So, like Quebec, between winter and between spring and summer, they have a season that they jokingly just call flies. Japan has a season between winter and spring they just call wind. And Russia famously has a season that happens sort of mid-spring that they just call mud. So, I mean, it's...
Ottawa has a season between winter and winter called construction.
Well, I mean, it's construction and winter are the two seasons in Canada. But I would say that it's humid and tropical. Those are the two,
yeah,
the two weather...
And touristy.
Oh
my gosh. Any visitors? I mean, if you ever come visit Ottawa, to the folks listening, let us know.
Yeah.
We could be your own little queer tour guides. So many tourists.
It is way more humid here than you would expect a Canadian city to be.
What I loved about the Halliburton station when I was talking to the folks there is they do a bingo and people lose their minds for this bingo.
Yeah.
And apparently they were like, it's over the radio, like every Friday, everyone, no matter what you're doing in your little cottage or, you know, literally there was a bar where everybody turned the sports off.
Yes.
Turned up the radio.
Uh-huh.
And everyone had little bingo sheets on their tables. And like they were all like, shh, the bingo's on.
Do they do the call outs like, gone to heaven, B11? Do they do that stuff?
I hope so. That would just be wonderful. If we ever visit Halliburton, we'll have to see if they're willing for us to
do the readouts?
To guest readout. That would be amazing. Actually, for folks listening in Fredericton, New Brunswick, on June the 8th, when the show goes out there, we will actually be live, as I will be in town and excited to offer a live rendition of Can Queer, hopefully with some guests from across the country. That's still working on the details, but right. Yeah, pretty exciting about that.
Well, it was I think it was 3 years ago when the radio conference was here in Ottawa.
Yeah, and we did the show
like
with a whole
7
bunch of
people or something. It was a very crowded room, but it was fun.
Yeah, we brought together some of the LGBT radio producers from across Canada to get involved. Now, speaking of, I had a great conversation with the Queerios, which is a program being broadcast out of, I think it is Guelph.
Okay.
And they do a great show. I thought they were a lot of fun when I listened to their
is
show.
Is it about the LGBT perspective on breakfast series?
So it is CKUW in Winnipeg. It's a morning show on Thursdays from 7 to 8 a.m. The Queerios, be sure to check them out. And their logo is literally just a Cheerio with the word Queerio written over the top of it.
Okay.
And a picture of the current hosts, like, in the middle whole bit, which I think is really fun. You know, I find that gay stuff goes one of two ways. It's either, like, so serious, they just have fun with
like,
it.
Like, deliberately low budget.
Yeah. Really, like, sort of, like, like, Microsoft Paint sort of level. I mean, I really apologize if these guys spent more than 20 minutes ago.
I mean, I've done logo design before where I made it so that it was clear that I made it on Microsoft Paint. And so many people are like, this looks cheap. And I'm like, yeah.
That was the intention.
That's the point.
Yeah. But The Queerios is an old show, and they have a revolving cast of presenters that come and speak to it. We'll be linking to them on our website. We haven't got the links up yet, but check out The Queerios. They're a lot of fun. And yeah, I did want to talk about Toronto, because somebody who's been a big fan of ours and a big fan of the show, Susan Gapka.
Okay.
Are you familiar? Do you remember?
Have I met her?
Trans activist out of Toronto, comes up for everything. Like, has been at, came up for all the bill hearings.
I meet people all the time. I may have met her. This is the
problem.
To see her,
you'd know her.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, no.
Susan, oh, I remember her.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Susan Gapka posted something that I thought was really interesting.
Okay, what's that?
And it was the decision by Pride Toronto to license the whole of Church Street.
Oh.
Now, what I thought was really interesting is sort of not only from Susan, but also from many others, the reaction to this news.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, some people are like, yes.
Yeah.
No, we don't have patios blocking up everything. You know, you can literally get your beer and go stroll. You don't have to camp out at a table. Yeah. You can go look at things and it'll be so much fun. It'll be amazing. Licensing the whole street.
It's going to be a litter nightmare, and I can guarantee you
that's not the issue that a lot of people are complaining about. What a lot of people are complaining about is that the gay and lesbian, bi and trans, blah 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 community have a massively disproportionate rate of substance dependency and drug and alcohol abuse, and you're literally taking Pride and by licensing, you know, the street.
Yeah.
You know, you're making it very inaccessible. I think this is, in many ways, this is sort of several steps back from where things are in terms of creating safer spaces.
Well, I think an easy solution would be to have, like, say on the Saturday, you license the whole street and you make it a party day with the live concerts and all that. And on the Sunday, you make it more of a community event with all the local organizers and, you know, local community groups can set up their tables and advertise their wares and their services and, you know, come join our group and all that. Because the thing is that, I mean, Toronto Pride has gotten to the scale that it has because it is a party, but it got started because it was politics. And I think acknowledging both can be done. It's going to be tricky, but it can be done. But I mean, part of the interesting thing about the historical context of all this is when public prohibition even came in North America, the original intent wasn't to prevent you from having a bottle of wine with lunch in a park on a Sunday. The original intent was supposed to stop belligerent public alcoholism. And it just sort of, you know, the 30s happened, and then people took it and they ran with it and they overinflated it. And now what we're seeing is people going, hold on a minute, or eine Minuten bitte, if you're German, and sort of stepping back and being like, what is the intent of this law? But anyway, the relationship with this and Pride, I mean, I also have mixed feelings. Like, I think it could be, if they use it as a fundraiser and they take all the funds that they gather from this and they slush it towards programming.
I don't think that's what's happening. What will end up happening is that, and the bars and restaurants in the street are thrilled with this, by the way. You know, they're able to get people in, out, sell a drink, get them going.
Yeah.
They wander back onto the street. The next customer comes on.
Yeah.
For people who do want to drink, you won't have as many long lineups. Yeah, It'll be a lot quicker to get a drink, which means you're spending more money. Mm-hmm. These bars are going to be raking in a lot more money.
But also because you're not constrained to one bar, it's going to be a lot harder to do smart serve. So if someone's been overserved, how do you know to cut them off? How do you know to turn them out?
Well, apparently there's going to be more police and security there because, of course, and that's the other complaint, because, of course, you know, the gay community isn't policed enough. You know what I mean? And that's been a big critique of Toronto, is that for all of the minutiae in terms of crimes, they seem to be coming down disproportionately on the gay community, and this is sort of the feeling out there. Whereas the big things, like a mass murdering lunatic, they really seem to drag their heels on. Mm. So there's that environment in Toronto. They're not happy about it. But, you know, it's done in Montreal. It is done on Rue Saint-Catherine.
Yep.
You know, and it happens there, and their point is, like,
Montreal's much more lax about public drinking in general.
Well, Ontario changed the laws in 2011 to kind of loosen up a little bit. Yeah. And that's when, you know, we started getting beer stores in
grocery stores
and stuff. Oh, beer in grocery stores. Back to the point that kind of some of the critique is that by licensing the bit of the street, those businesses will make more money.
Yeah.
I am sure it'll make a far more valuable relationship between Pride Toronto and those businesses. And of course, festivals need to make money to make things happen.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't realize it's extremely expensive to
run
a festival.
And those bars need to make money so they don't get bought out by developers, because the community is slowly dying, because a lot of the old businesses, like the old bookstores and stuff, a lot of them are struggling to keep their doors open.
Yeah. Well, what's really interesting is that you don't see as much of the local community, because, I mean, I think it's, is it not Key West, but West something in Toronto?
Oh, Queen West.
Queen West.
Yeah.
Has a big gay community now. It's like they're sort of moving away from the downtown core because it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Bruce MacArthur murders had a chilling effect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, yeah.
Like, so I think, like, the community in New York City, if I remember correctly, started off in Hell's Kitchen and then moved to Soho and then landed in Greenwich. And it just, like, the exact same thing. They would move in, develop it, couldn't afford their own place, and the entire community would have to move. So there was this cycle. Now that...
By the way, that cycle is called gentrification. For everybody's...
Well, then there's debates about, like, there's natural gentrification where things just happen gradually over time. And then there's, like, the state stepping in and, like...
Yeah. Engineer gentrification.
Yep. And, yeah, there's a... Anyway. But now that the Stonewall Inn was not recently, but a year ago, declared a historical site, now they're kind of, like, locked... They're not locked in, but it's, like, it wouldn't behoove them to try to move on to another cheaper neighborhood. And where would you go? It's Manhattan. There's not a lot of space, but Toronto has room to move around.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't have is a lot of space to set up, because Toronto has a lot of municipal bylaws regarding noise. So if you want to open a new dance club, it's really hard because most of the neighborhoods are locked down to be quiet neighborhoods. So if you want to open a new bar,
there's almost nowhere where you can. I think the financial district, weirdly, is also like a clubbing district.
Because
nobody lives there.
Well, yeah, that's in most of, like, so when I lived in Hong Kong, when I lived in Japan, the business district, all the basements of all the big towers, the basements had dance clubs in them, because at night, who cares? You might have a few office workers who are there doing a night shift at 11, but it's just whatever. But Toronto doesn't really have that. You don't really have, like, around Nathan Phillips would be a really good area to have a clubbing district, because there's not that many people who live there, and most of them are students anyway, and it would be a really good neighborhood. But no, there's just people are spreading out, so it's I don't know, it's complicated.
It is complicated. What's one of the other areas that raised concern is the fact that apparently Pride Toronto hadn't released any kind of consultation on this. So a lot of folks kind of got annoyed that there's this big change for somebody in recovery. Now, I mentioned earlier that a lot of lesbian, gay, bi, and trans folks develop dependencies on alcohol and on drugs.
Yeah.
There's many reasons of that. You know, you could be looking at social isolation as a result of being gay, internalized homophobia, you know, the stress and anxiety of coming out or not coming out, acceptance, and so on and so forth. Trans folks are massively disproportionate for drug and alcohol abuse. And really, that's our community. We have to be aware. And I think, you know, both you and I have been Pride organizers.
Oh, yeah.
And there's certainly a bit of an onus on engaging with the folks who are in recovery.
Yeah.
And making sure that we are creating a Pride that's accessible to all.
Well, like as I said, I think there's a right way and a wrong way to go about doing this. You could easily do it in a way that just makes things worse. But, like, I actually kind of like the solution that they came up with here in Ottawa a couple years ago, where they have a dry stage and a wet stage. And the dry stage has all of the Indigenous performers, all of the family-friendly events. They have a couple big names that you would expect to be in the bar zone. So ideally, like, if we had the budget, you would get a name in there like Ray Spoon. on the dry stage, just to show that, like, it's not the consolation stage and all the real, you know, quote-unquote real performers that you actually want to see are on. The headliners are on the wet stage. You put a couple headliners on the dry stage as well, mm-hmm. because it's not the consolation prize. It's just an alternative. And, you know, the dry stage is more on the street, and the wet stage is more tucked away. And like, there's a way to do it. And I think that there's a way to make it happen that balances all of the concerns.
Well, it's not the whole of Church Street. It is from Charles Street East down to Dundas Street East.
Okay.
So, it's a chunk of the street.
I think that's the part where Hair of the Dog is.
Okay, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
And, you know, that's...
I haven't lived there for years.
That's sort of the area that will be... And, of course, there will be locations that are more family-friendly, and there will presumably be locations for folks in recovery.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the fact that this decision was made... That does affect a chunk of the street.
Yeah.
That where last year folks in recovery could very well have enjoyed themselves.
Yeah.
But now, you know, there's that added barrier of I can't even walk down the street.
Yeah.
Folks aren't happy.
Well, I mean, I just hope they do it in a way that's not counterproductive. Because, I mean, it is what it is. They've already made the plans. They're going ahead with it. At this point in time, best we can do is, you know... Send them strongly worded letters. Please make sure that if you're going to do this, you do this in a way that is more good than bad, or that balances all the sides. Because, yeah, I mean...
They have made another decision, though, that has gone down quite well.
Positively, yes.
And I think this is actually a very respectful way of acknowledging that... Bruce MacArthur, who had murdered Skandaraj Navaratnam, Andrew Kinsman, Salim Hassan, Abdullah Faizi, Karushna Kumar Kanagratham, and Dean Lysowick, and Sarush Mahmoodi, and Majid Kayan.
And possibly more,
and I apologize for any mispronounced names. You know, and that's... He murdered those people, mm-hmm. targeted them within the community, created a culture of fear for... decades in the community, and he's been caught, thank mm-hmm. the heavens for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the community has been reeling
yeah.
over the past year. So Pride has seen this. They're seeing this grief and the fact that people are still processing this. And what they've decided to do, they're saying, you know, Pride is all about celebration, and it's about the color, it's about
yeah.
you know, sort of the ability to do extravagant or not. It's to have yeah. the option of yeah. going out there and being who you are.
But also, Pride is about demonstrations.
Well, and that feeds beautifully to the next point. But what Pride Toronto have made is they've decided that, you know, we also have to acknowledge that there are some things we can't really be celebrating. That
yeah.
we need to acknowledge that there has been, you know, a trauma
yeah.
in the community, which is all of these men just targeted and murdered by a crazy serial killer. So what they're doing is actually they're ending the parade in black.
Right.
So volunteers will be wearing black, and it's sort of the equivalent of like a moving moment of silence, I would imagine, as, you know, kind of like a full stop to the parade.
I believe it's called a dirge.
Yes. I usually call things dirgy when it goes on forever and it's kind of boring. But I think that's... You're right. That's literally what a
funerary march. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They tend to
yeah.
a bit dry, aren't they? But no, and I think that's a beautiful way of. I mean, and it's political in that it's not embracing the color; it's taking away the colors.
Yeah.
But also, this is a community that, you know, has recovered broadly speaking, but there is so much trepidation. Because as the ground defrosts,
yeah,
there's this feeling that this summer is going to open up who knows what other lines of inquiry, who knows who else they're going to find, if they will find other folks. You know, he was in his 60s. They reckon he's been doing it for 40 years.
Yeah.
So there's this sense of, I don't know. And I think this decision by Pride Toronto was a well chosen one. It will be interesting to see... whether or not other prides across Canada would likewise show, you know, a kind of a solidarity move. You know, there are over 110 prides in this country as communities coast to coast to coast celebrate the diversity within Canada. in terms of sexual and gender identities. Mm-hmm. And it would be really interesting to see if the other prides also kind of celebrate in this kind of respectful way.
Yeah.
Folks coming through this trauma.
Well, I would say acknowledge.
That's
maybe not celebrate, but yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Acknowledge is the better term.
Yeah.
And it did remind me of a story from Pride Sheffield. They issued guidelines that said that Pride Sheffield is not a protest. It is an actual celebration.
Okay.
There will be no protesting.
I feel like maybe if they broke it into two parts, like Saturday is a protest and Sunday is a celebration, I would be like 100% behind that. But doing one without the other, that's not Pride. That's something else.
Well, apparently anyone with placards and banners that are sort of protesty,
okay,
won't be allowed in the parade.
Okay.
And I think it has to do with with Sheffield's definition of what a parade is and what a march is.
It's a municipal thing.
And the permits required for both. Yeah, so they've released that, you're effectively kicked out.
Oh.
Anyway, it's gone down like a lead balloon, as I'm sure you would imagine. But yeah, no, it's their decision. I mean, I can understand it. You know, yeah. you don't want to run foul of city planning. But also, how ridiculous is it to say to the community...
Historically, Pride has been both. It's been both at the same time, and the celebration...
Well, it started as a protest.
Yeah.
When after a while, you're like, we still have work to do.
I think this is a big city, small town divide, though. Because small towns, their Pride always starts off as a celebration. They generally start off as a family picnic. Large cities tend to start off as a protest. And I think if you're looking at somewhere like Sheffield, I think they're just not used to the entanglement of the two yet. So, I mean, I think they need to modernize. I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but they're wrong. if you know what I mean, like I have compassion towards the city. I think they're looking at the rules and they're saying, well, the rules say blah, blah, blah. And the answer is, well, the rules are dumb. We need to change the rules. I acknowledge that. Thank you very much. But, you know, you need to modernize a bit.
Yeah,
absolutely. But small towns usually do start off as community events. So, I mean, I'm sympathetic towards them, but I also think they need to up their game a bit.
We are going to play Troy Sivan's Bloom.
Okay.
He told people in a video that it is about gardening. Although, I think for folks in the gay community who maybe are more willing to receive certain pieces of information, this song has a different meaning altogether. This is Troye Sivan's Bloom, and we'll be back just after this.
A trip into my garden, I've got so much to show you. The fountains and the waters are begging just to know you, and it's true, baby. I've been saving this for you, baby. I guess it's something like a funfair. Put gas into the motor, and boy, I'll meet you right there. We'll ride the roller coaster, cause it's true, baby. I've been saving this for you, baby. I need you to tell me right before it goes down. Promise me you'll hold my hand if I get scared now. Might tell you to take a second, baby, slow down. You should know I. Yeah, I'll bloom, I bloom just for you. I'll bloom just for you. Yeah, I'll bloom, I bloom just for you. I'll bloom just for you. Dancing with the trees, and I've waited my whole life. It's true, baby. I've been saving this for you, baby. I need you to tell me right before it goes down. Promise me you'll hold my hand if I get scared now. Might tell you to take a second, baby, slow down. You should know I, you should know I. For you, yeah, I bloom just for you.
just for you. I bloom just for you. Baby, baby, I've been saying this for you, baby, baby. Yeah, I bloom just for you.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, we have a bit more Canadian news. We have actually lots of news, but we'll kind of stick to the Canadian stuff for right now.
All right.
And
so nothing about London.
Oh, I know. That was an interesting story. Okay, well, you brought it up. So why don't you tell the people what the story is?
Okay, so the happy story, well, not happy, but kind of funny story, was somebody was doing a Google search for their friend's place and how to get there. And then they clicked on the, like, you know, find the best path. And it involved, you know, walking through this park. And often when you do this, there's images attached to locations. So, you know, it'll have, like, you know, the, here's a mall. You'll be turning right at this corner. It has a little picture of the mall. And then you go through the park. And then here's a picture of a gay orgy happening in the park. And then, you know, you turn right and, whoa, wait a minute. There's a picture of a what? And that was the story. And it was, there was, so what probably happened.
It was an app called City Mapper.
Oh, okay, okay.
That sourced its mapping info off of Yahoo.
Okay. And off of Yahoo?
So off of Yelp.
Sorry, Yelp, there you Yahoo. Go. Okay. So what probably happened is somebody took pictures of them and some fine young gentlemen doing fine young gentleman business, did not turn off their geolocator. It accidentally got scooped up by Yelp, and then this picture
in the Yelp review of Hampstead Heath.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there you gotta review cruising locations somewhere, and why not Yelp, you know? But the guy was more alarmed than anything.
It was a lady.
It was
she,
a lady.
Yeah, she was like, why is this image popping up on my, like, you don't even get all the way through Heath.
Yeah.
Like, you're typing it in and it's like suggested finding and you just find like an image for like.
The app just responded, you know, this is combed automatically from other websites. Ask them, you know.
Yeah, we've reached out. We'll try and resolve it. And then, obviously, Twitter found out because this conversation was happening between the user and the developers on Twitter. And they were like, you know, Twitter in London was like, you know, have you... It's actually an accurate description if you've walked through Hampstead Heath.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people were like, yeah, no, that's...
That sounds like that park.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that was on Thursday. Like... You know, and there are some areas and some towns which develop a bit of a reputation.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, funny story. In the city of Ottawa, there are no hedges in parks. I think it's either above or below a certain height because they kept finding that people were doing inappropriate behavior in city parks around the city. So they were, you know, they tried strongly discouraging, they tried arresting them en masse. And in the end, they're like, you know what? This is why we can't have nice things. No more hedges.
Mm-hmm.
That's why today you will struggle to find a good size hedge anywhere in the city of Ottawa in a city run park.
I see.
Yeah. True story.
I see. The other news story out of London, and this is...
Actually, I did want to mention something that's sort of partially linked to this, and that has to do with Craigslist.
Oh, yes.
And it was an interesting story.
Yeah, I read that too.
If you got around.
So they disabled the personal ads on Craigslist. Now, the thing is that the personal ads on Craigslist, has actually been a very, well, a safer venue for sex workers to advertise their services for quite some time.
And Backpage, but the FBI shut down Backpage, I think, about a month ago.
So what's happening now is a lot of them are migrating over to the casual work section to be like, I will clean your gutters, and if you want me to be naked while I do that, that's okay by me.
Absolutely.
$120 an hour.
I mean, the reasoning why, I mean, it was a bit of a blunt instrument to remove it. And I think the personal ads in Craigslist in Canada are still there. So this is still very much a US story.
Okay.
But the, and I think this actually, this specific story is in the UK, because I think they shut them down in the UK as well. The blunt instrument was because that folks who were being trafficked were the traffickers were using Craigslist and other similar services. Now, folks who are trafficked, they would be forced to take sort of various pictures. They often were branded with tattoos so that the traffickers would know who they are, like who owns who on these websites. And Canada does have a sex trafficking problem. It is a major situation that happens in nearly every town and city in this country. Very serious issue that does affect a lot of people. And one of the ways that they've been catching trafficking victims is through Craigslist and Backpage and so on. So the blunt instrument was to say, no more ads. But of course, folks who are legitimately just trying to earn their way, they're not trafficked, not all sex work is trafficked. It's removing venues that are safer than what you may traditionally consider of Lady of the Night. But the result of this is that they've migrated to some innovative methods. And I think there's an ad here for naked cleaning and domestic chores. And some of them are, you know, looking for extra cash. Could be naked. You never know. So I feel sorry for anyone who unwittingly is just like trying to get somebody to trim the hedges. And somebody shows up with a beard trimmer, completely misinterpreting. I thought it was a funny story that kind of connects the Craigslist one. But what was the London one? Because I think you mentioned when we talked before the show that really this is something that we could see in Vancouver and Toronto.
So currently this is a London story. But it is on its way. So in London, they have a huge housing crisis. There's a mass shortage of housing. And there was actually a Vice report done on this about a year ago where there are people who are going around specifically hunting for empty houses. Because there are empty houses all over London that real estate prospectors will buy low and sell high. But what this means is that you have empty houses all over the city. So, you know, the police crack down on it and lately they've been actually getting really good at it. And it's one of those things in the Vice report when they actually spoke to the police about it. The police are like, look, we know it's a dumb law. We know these are empty houses. We know we shouldn't be turning these squatters out on the street. But, you know, this is interpreting the law is the job for the politicians and the lawyers. We're here to enforce the law, even if it's dumb. So please, please, please protest. It was really interesting. But anyway, it's gotten effective enough that the housing crisis is bad enough that there are people who are sleeping in saunas and bathhouses. Now, a gay sauna and a gay bathhouse is not just a place to go and get a little bit of steam and, you know, a workout. Sometimes they're also that, but
I mean, this is not to say, there are many folks. I've attended, you know,
you went on a special bathhouse report. Was it six years ago?
Yeah, to the one here in Ottawa. It freaked me out, but I went to one here in Ottawa.
I think it's better to say it wasn't for you.
It was not for me, but we also went to one of the ones in Montreal.
Yeah.
And similar experience. It's just not really for me.
Yeah.
It is gay bathhouses and saunas.
Yeah.
Are a interesting environment because there are certain activities there aside from getting nice and hot and steamy, you know, to let it open up the pores.
There are small rooms with mattresses in them. So, I mean,
draw conclusions as you will.
The audience knows what to
think. And it's the small rooms with mattresses with lockable doors that is sort of where these men are going, you know.
They ended up having to introduce policies that you had to clear out after 8 hours because it wasn't because the bathhouse owners were heartless. It was because if people took up permanent residence, they could get cracked down by the city because they would technically be running a hotel, which they're not licensed for, well, and they can't afford the licenses for. So, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, in order to help everyone, we have to limit you, and we are terribly sorry. And they would also, like, try to raise funds to help people get off the streets, and they've been fairly successful. But there are housing crises right now in Vancouver and Toronto that are not quite that bad. But people are starting to project that it's going to get very bad in the next couple of years if something isn't done, or if something doesn't correct itself. Because, like, Vancouver has recently had the empty rentals bylaws that have come in, or even just the empty housing bylaws. I think it's not even rentals. It's just empty housing bylaws to help curb a lot of this from happening. And hopefully this will get somewhere, because otherwise we are going to have the sort of functional homeless, because it's really amazing when you hear about, like, the number of people who are technically, well, not technically, but who are homeless, but who still have jobs, but they just, well, they have, they're working poor, and the housing costs are so high. Now is
underhoused.
Yeah. So it's getting pretty bad where you have people who do have sources of income, but the housing is so bad in their community, they have to basically live off the streets or live in bathhouses or something. And
Oh, you know, you could be in a friend's couch for a couple of days, bathhouses for two nights, street one night if you can't find somewhere.
And the main
Airbnb
thing,
if it's cheap,
that they were finding in London is that for a few years now, they've seen this with a lot of gay men using these services, but they're starting to find straight men who are sort of out of desperation. Not that, you know, it's desperate to hang out with some gay men for the evening. It's just, you know, just pants on or pants off is the question. But they're starting to find that there are a lot of people who normally would not be coming in who are now coming in just because it's like, you know,
and it's
£8 a night for a mattress, which is more
cheaper than you're ever going to find anywhere else.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah.
There is this is putting people in desperate situations, typically putting very desperate men in very desperate positions. We spoke a few weeks ago about the BuzzFeed's coverage of landlords offering men room in return for sexual favors. That was actually part one in that three-part series. This is the third part in their investigation of this. And this is some top shelf reporting from BuzzFeed on this subject matter.
And as we said last time, you can make fun of BuzzFeed all you want, but BuzzFeed News is a different branch
they're doing quite well.
They're pretty good at journalism. Yeah.
This is really interesting, especially when you look at the Canadian sort of environment. There are bathhouses in Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto, and it is not that expensive to, you know, rent it for 12 hours, 14 hours.
When I lived in Hamilton, I remember I had friends who, when they went in to party in Toronto, they would sleep overnight at a bathhouse because it was like $10 for a room for the evening. And, you know, maybe you wanted to partake in the facilities. Probably you didn't, because you had just gone out partying and you just wanted a shower. And thankfully they have showers on the premises. And then you just go to sleep and just lock your door and hope nobody bothers you.
Yeah.
Bring earplugs, because there's going to be a lot of yelling.
There's lots of atmospheric sounds.
Atmospheric sounds.
Yeah.
Moist noises.
Yeah, that's what we're going with. Atmospheric sounds is really where I'm going to leave that one.
But it's something that could be on the horizon. That's just something worth, you know, trying to take seriously. But we're getting towards the end. Do we have time for one more story?
It's worth noting that the Inside Out Toronto Film Festival is starting up soon. That's always a very popular...
I thought that was September. What's in September?
I think it's the Ottawa Film Festival.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
So May 24th to June 3rd is the Toronto LGBT Film Festival. It's actually considered one of the largest film festivals for the LGBT community in the world. Mm-hmm. It is a big deal for gay movies. So that'll be happening. What I didn't know that the CBC had done is...
Canada's I was hoping you would choose this story, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, and I looked at one or two of them, and they were sort of kind of like vignettes, I suppose, looking at the lives of an array of drag queens within Canada.
Because this is something we've talked about before, that, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race, whether you like it or not, fact is, it is displacing Indigenous drag in various communities around the world.
And we mean Indigenous drag here as in drag that's
typical to that region.
Yeah. Local to an area.
Yeah, local to an area. So it, and this is sort of counteracting that, because there are traditions of drag in Canada that don't look anything like anything you would see on Drag Race. And it's not better or worse, it's just a difference. Yeah. But it's, this is sort of permitting the Canadian local differences to actually come out, and, you know, so that people can see this is an alternative kind of drag that's also available.
We also have a thriving drag king scene.
Oh, yes.
Here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I think Canadian drag kings are among the kind of world class. I have many drag king friends, yeah, who frequently are in, you know, LA and you know, Hollywood, and
there's also
really representing at an international stage.
Really interesting overlap between drag kings and the burlesque scene, mm-hmm, where they tend to work together. Not always, like, there are a couple drag kings here in Ottawa who do burlesque, so they go out and they start off doing a drag king act, and then halfway through they genre shift, and then they start removing clothes. And there's a few famous ones who do this act, and it's kind of an interesting overlap. That is, I don't know if it's indigenous to Ottawa, but it's definitely something that is, I've never seen it anywhere other than Ottawa. So I don't know. It's interesting, and it's good to see innovation happening, and it's good to see growth in the community. And I also actually like the fact that there's this cross communication between the drag kings and the burlesque scene. You get this sort of cross-cultural thing, because burlesque is starting to head towards variety shows. So they're getting things like sitar players and ballet dancers and poetry readers. Like, they're getting a little bit more multi-disciplinary. So it's really interesting seeing everything sort of cross-referencing. It's good. Well, I'm into it. That's my conclusion. You know, eight stars out of 10. Room for improvement, but definitely solid.
Well, there was a lot of news that we did not get to this week, including some Canadian news out of Alberta and Ontario. But we'll actually post those two on our website, www.canqueer.news. But hopefully folks listening are slightly more aware of what's happened in Canada this week and the world, and some of the challenges being faced by the community.
Hopefully,
absolutely. Well, I'm actually hopeful to see Cote Perrette, who's now on a Canadian tour, although the closest she's getting is Gatineau at Salon d'Issy. But I don't know if I can get over there. That'll be a bit of a challenge. Now, we will be playing her song, that's the second track on the album, called Premonition.
Okay.
And we'll be playing out with that. Thanks for listening, everybody. And if you want to hear a bit more Canadian queer content, check out our website, where we link to a number of Canadian LGBT broadcasts and podcasts. And also don't forget to check out the Queerios, who I discovered are adorable. So I've been Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Je comptais tes peurs dans le temps, ce qui sépare l'espace de tes choix. Je n'étais pas seule, et les fleurs, tu les comptes sur le bout de tes doigts, qui défient noirceur et supplice. Mais moi je suis attirée par le vice. On s'assemblait ensemble, mes petits m'attendent. Et quand le jour se lève, je reviens vers toi. Ce que je reconnais, ce n'est que vie dans moi. D'abus je vis d'erreur, tes mots comme une loi, comme une prémonition. On ne changera pas, on ne changera pas. Nos cris font tomber et les murs d'une vie qu'on se plaît à pousser. Les limites des corps, ceux qui partagent nos ébats, nos pensées. On s'éprend de douleur, mais on est attiré par notre malheur. On détruit ensemble, mes petits matins. Je reviens vers toi, ce que je reconnais, ce n'est que vivre en moi. comme